All lines are now bridged.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to what is now the third official meeting of the Clinical and Administrative Data Task Force. We will go ahead and get started, starting with roll call. Cheryl Turney.
Here.
Alex Goss.
Present.
Erin Meary. Don't think we have him yet. Abby Sears.
Here.
Alicia.
Here.
Alexis Snyder.
Here.
And Andy Truscott. Not yet. Okay. Anil Jain.
I'm here.
Arian Malik.
I'm here.
Deb Strickland, I believe, is going to be absent. Denise Webb.
I'm here.
Hi, Denise. Gus Tracy.
Here.
Perfect. Jackie Monson is going to be absent as well. Jim Pentella.
I'm here.
Great. Jim Jurgis.
Yeah, here.
Jocelyn Keegan.
Yes, here.
Les Leonard.
I'm here.
Great. Mary Green and Rich Landon will be absent. Ram, Sri Ram, on the phone? Not yet. Okay, Sasha Termot.
Here.
Steve Brown.
Here.
Tom Mason.
I'm on.
Welcome. And joining us today, Josh Harvey, also representing HCA, along with Jim Jurgis. At this point, I will turn it over to our co-chairs to get us started.
Well, thank you so very much, Lauren. This is Alex Goss. Happy to be here today. A number of my colleagues from NCVHS, as you heard in roll call, will not be present as they are carrying forward with today's full committee meeting. So I'm grateful for the opportunity to have such great attendance on today's call. I'm going to be kicking us off now that we've completed roll call, sort of setting us up for sort of a kind of a staging for the rest of today's call, and with Jim's, Jurgis's team's support, and Cheryl, they're going to walk you through some of the work that's been done since our last productive discussion just a week ago, and then hopefully we will be able to accomplish sort of a structure for the next call, and that we'll start to get ourselves very much into a path of work streams by the end of this month. So, Cheryl, did you have any opening remarks you'd like to make before we jump to the next slide?
No, I want to thank everybody for caring forward while I wasn't here last week, and I'm very pleased with the at least initial workflow that they put together for the devices. So, look forward to getting into that discussion.
Well, thank you. I appreciate with everything else going on right now that you had time to read through the transcript and also have volunteered to work with the workflow team as we move forward. So if we could go to the next slide, please. And the next slide. All right. And the next slide. All right. We're just kicking them out today. All right, so let's start with a little bit of a recap from our last meeting. It was really good for us to hear from Lauren, Rebecca Hines, and Tom Mason, clarity about the authorities of the respective federal advisory committees and the work that we're doing under 21st Century Cures and our respective federal advisory committees. We are very much running within our own trajectory of responsibilities while maintaining a strong linkage between HITACH and the National Committee on Vital and Health Statistics. We are all wanting to see the burdens and challenges from the separation of clinical and administrative data sets resolved, and so that we can better underscore interoperability and efficiency in the system. As you know, we've been focusing on our high-level prior authorization workflow on the last call. The first cut from Jim and the HCA team was really fantastic and produced a lot of good discussion last week. I think we're clear that we want to focus on the happy path for the workflows, making sure we're building them out with all the feedback that you provided last week so that we can have a framework of common understanding of the prior authorization pieces and start to then peel back the layers, enabling us to look at the various flavors of prior authorization and how we might continue to take a deeper dive into those respective paths, and also looking along the way for the opportunities to reduce burden and promote efficiencies for patient care. We talked a lot about trust and transparency and the patient focus last week. Those themes were picked up by the expanded workflow team. You know, Jim had some volunteers come to the table, so we're grateful for Alexis and Carolyn and Jim for raising their hands and working with him in the past week, along with some other resources that Jim has brought to bear from HCA. So what we want to do today is provide an opportunity for us to continue in this initial very fluid process of going through a new workflow that they've produced around durable medical equipment. We're going to have Jim and his team facilitate the discussion with Cheryl's support, looking for additional commentary and input today. Ultimately, I'd love to see us get through this DME focused workflow and have some clarity at the end of that discussion about what we've learned, how we need to mature that, and what that might mean as we move forward with other various flavors of prior authorizations. We know pharmacy is another big area. We're grateful for NCPDP for providing us with some implementation guide content that the workflow team can use, so that'll help us with that. But we have some other specialty flavors that we might need to take into consideration. But we can hold on to that thought while we pivot to the next slide and ask Jim and his teammate Josh, along with Cheryl and I believe Alexis and maybe a few of the others. Jim, I don't think Carolyn can make it today, but looking forward to seeing the new workflow that you've designed and seeing where it takes us.
Great. Thanks, Alex. Go ahead, Jim.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Cheryl. Next slide, please. So what we had talked about, just to back up, I think, make sure we're all on the same page. Here are some key points that we kind of pulled out from past discussions in addition to what was just covered. That defining the workflows in question for the four areas in sufficient enough detail to be useful was one of the goals. So the prototype was high level, kind of almost cartoonishly high. And one of the pieces of feedback, let's get to another level of detail. I don't think what you're going to see is going to be, I think we're going to take one, there's going to have to be one more level of detail with swim lanes and workflows still. But I think we have gone deeper. The second is people will comment, well, we don't want to just hardwire a process that's horrible. But instead, isn't there an ideal state? And the notion of this practical ideal state kind of, I think, emerged that, yeah, we want to understand that there are some, for example, state requirements that constrain us from in some ways. But, you know, how many different steps can we just eliminate in the current process if we just had the ability to get to the third bullet and say, if we had standards, data models, workflow integrations, and transport methods, and we had information really collected earlier in the process in an actionable way, how many of these ridiculous steps could we actually take out and simplify? And as I understand the 21st Century Cures Act, the goals are, you know, interoperability, patient engagement and access, and reducing provider burden, and this should hit all three. And really the goal at the end of it is this workflow stuff should only be helpful if it's at the right level of detail to then tee up what is an ability to articulate an organized set of recommendations for HITECH around the standards, data models, workflow integrations, and transport methods rooted in the current workflows, but made far better than existing. So next step. So our goal is the bottom button. I'm sorry, go back again. Our goal is to actually use this not just as an exercise, but to actually get a nice framework to allow us all to say, here are some cogent recommendations for ONC. So cycle two, what we decided to do is go deep. I think as a group last time, we said, let's go deep take a deeper dive in a particular use case, see how far we can get, and then expand it to the other use case, we need to involve the patient or delegate far more deliberately in this next cycle. And then we need to develop this use case as a prototype to then guide some consistency around tackling the other use cases. If we can all kind of agree that we've gotten to the right level of detail in the workflow to lend itself to opportunity and ability to articulate recommendations, then we would apply that methodology to the nuances of the other use cases. The ultimate goal being defining workflows with enough granularity to provide those recommendations. So the next slide. So before we walk into this, any comments on what we're trying to do or questions from the group? Okay, we'll march through this. Go ahead.
Jim, just to provide, I reviewed this, and I actually think you did a great job, the entire group, in trying to express this out in understandable terms, both from the patient perspective and the real life, evolution of what someone has to go through. So I like the way it was represented, and hopefully we can sort of build on this. I do agree the swim lanes with the actors will make it a little bit more understandable when we try to translate it to what are the standards that we need, who would those recommendations rely upon for either information sooner or et cetera. But I think this was a great start.
Okay, well, and I'm just gonna walk through this slide and then together as a group, because there's a lot of, even on this slide, Alexis, Jim, others who are on the call, please chime in to make color commentary as I go through it. And so this was going deeper with a prototype, but for DME. We talked a lot about, do we pick the most complex workflow? I think Jim brought up the notion of a particular device from his personal experience that was involved all kinds of different middle players besides just a DME company and a therapist, but getting an employer stating why somebody needs it, a school, that there may be a cacophony of people that have to help make the case. We thought maybe that was too complex to for our purposes, that we would start with something a little more straightforward, like a wheelchair. Wheelchair brings in several players, the patient, the provider, the notion of a therapist group that does an assessment, the notion of a DME company that would be fulfillment, and then obviously the patient and their the delegate's activity in the process. And so as we walk through, the first step was, please interrupt me, members of the team that help with this, the patient determines that they have a need for medical assistance. They then visit either a therapist that they have a relationship with or a provider, and they indicate their insurance information to that provider. And again, this is not ideal state. Number three, the provider therapist determines that a wheelchair is needed and writes a letter of medical necessity. Step four, the provider writes a prescription for the wheelchair, sending the request to the durable medical equipment company. Step five is a meeting is scheduled between the patient and the durable medical equipment company to evaluate the needs, options, and features for the wheelchair. Step six is the appointment actually happens and the wheelchair is ordered. Step seven, the durable medical equipment company informs the provider that a prior authorization is needed, along with what information is involved in the submission. Number eight, the provider and staff begin the PA process, submit to the DME company. The DME company in step nine submits the PA to the payer. The payer then makes an assessment and responds either that more information is needed, in which case the provider, therapist, and DME company gather more information, maybe perhaps starting the cycle over in this inferior model. Or a PA is approved, but in this case, then the DME sets up time to deliver the wheelchair, patient receives it, And in my own experience with patients, I have experienced that sometimes it doesn't meet the patient's needs. It doesn't fit, or it's missing a cushion or a neck support or something, which means there may be modifications that have to occur even after it's in the patient's hands. And the third possibility is that the PA is denied, in which case four possible things could happen. One is a payer recommends an alternative, or if duly insured, then information is sent to the second payer, or if it's partially approved, then what's not approved is sent then to the second payer to attempt for approval. Or the patient goes without or works with the provider or others on different methods to get the wheelchair, United Leg, et cetera. Or there's an appeals process that could be improved upon. Let's just go to the next slide because I think then people can comment on. So we're not articulating that we should simply hardwire that somewhat crappy workflow, if you would. But what I think the team can comment on as we walk through is just a few examples of opportunities that I think if we transfer this to one of those swim lanes, then we can actually begin articulating the data standards, et cetera, that might support it. So there are some opportunities here that we came up with as thoughts. And it, of course, if you look at the green at the lower portion, this notion of the patient being more deliberately involved up front in opportunity B and A, where the patient's needs are collected more comprehensively, the patient's benefit design is understood in a machine understandable way. And then throughout the entire process, there should be a state machine that is actually keeping track of status and providing passive ways for people to log on and find out where it is in the process, and also active, proactive notification, including the patient or any of these other actors, that information is missing or where it's held up in the process or what its status is. That was sort of an overarching assumption that through each of these steps there should be transparency as to process. A lot of the opportunities on the front end were getting the benefit. I think someone on the last call mentioned getting the benefits right up front. And collecting more information from the patient, maybe having the patient begin to articulate the letter of medical necessity and contributing. Opportunity E, throughout here there's a lot of opportunities to define data sets, make sure that they are either available earlier in the process or communicated as an automatic byproduct of an encounter. And so we can walk through each of these, but I think there's patient being involved in the process through most of it. There's automation. There's making sure information that's needed and benefits are provided earlier in the process. And then at the end, when there's things denied or more information is needed, not having to start the whole process over, but instead being able to simply along the way provide missing information. So one notion that came up is often the only way to get more information is let the whole process fail, get to a denial, so someone can be notified it was denied so they can start the process all over again, this time providing hopefully the information that's needed. Instead, there ought to be a system along the way that actually identifies early what's missing and is causing the denial before it occurs. So Jim, Alexis, others who are on the call, Josh, other comments about this?
Hi, this is Jim. I just have some thoughts, and the opportunity levels are ones that I think are of significance, but I also think it's pretty significant that the letter of medical necessity, in my experience, that doesn't get finalized until after the DME, the patient, and the therapist meet, because they have to justify every feature. And it's the justification of the features that's built into that notification that goes on to the payer that gets things hung up. The wheelchair has to have a certain set of abductors or a specific head restraint or things like that, that all needs to be justified, and it needs to be tied back to the medical condition. And that all gets done a little bit later in the process. So that letter of medical necessity that's outlined in step three really doesn't get completed until about step six or someplace in 6.5.
Yeah, we can move. Yeah. Let's move that, Josh.
The thing is, I think that you could, this is Cheryl, look at many of these blocks and say they could be moved. I don't know if the order of events is really the thing that we should be focusing on at this point. I really think what we need to focus on is, like, what's the data that's needed for that decision, and is there a way to get them that data sooner? And my example for that, you were talking about some things that maybe I'm not as familiar with, but, you know, my daughter had, a femur removed and hip surgery. Well, they knew before going in she'd have to have a wheelchair. Stupidly, we did not know that. You know, it didn't dawn on, dense head here that she would need a wheelchair coming out of the hospital. So why couldn't a lot of that information be conveyed up front so that the decision can be made? Because we had issues, because my daughter is very short and small. She needed a child-sized wheelchair, and they brought her an adult one, and it wasn't usable. So that's a perfect example of not getting the right thing, weighed in by everybody. So, information like that, I would be less concerned about, where it appears in the steps, and more about what's the data that's needed for the appropriate decisions to be made. And then in her case, and I don't know about other people's, but it would seem to happen with other durable medical equipment, there was a whole conversation about rent or own, which she had no idea about, and neither did I. And we thought we made a decision on that, and then later come to find out, for 2 years she was renting the wheelchair when she no longer needed it, and they told her she owned it. So somehow that's all involved in this prior authorization decision as well, but wasn't communicated very well. So to me, all of those parts of the information in terms of cost, et cetera, need to be conveyed up front in a way that's understandable to the patient so that they know what they're agreeing to. And then the doctor and the therapist have the information that's needed in order to move forward.
This is Steve Brown. I might make a comment from a different direction. And first of all, I'd like to thank Jim and his team for putting this together as a point of discussion. And I'd like to try to tie the obvious complexity of the slide that we're now seeing back to the initial slide where he was talking about having, standards and stuff like that. And one of the conversations, perhaps you had it last week when I was on spring break at the beach, is having a standard notation for process modeling that's explicit and reproducible and supports the flows that look like our PowerPoint-based here. So I think there's another level of standards, not just data standards, but process modeling standards that would behoove us to consider before spending a lot of time making process models informally that are, hard to reuse. Specifically, I'm aware of work in OMG with something called BPM Plus. It's there's a BPM-plus.org site where they're working to do healthcare modeling with American College of Emergency Physicians and I believe ACOG for some of their guidelines. But these are the same shape things and all that. So I'd like to add that on the list of things to talk about.
That's a good point. I think that's the next level. We have to get to that level of professional process modeling.
Just a process question, meta process question. I think last meeting we were trying to use the hand-raising features. This meeting seems to be more of a open discussion. Can we just have clarity as to whether we should be using,
I was just going to say we need to use the hand-raising feature. If you would like to make a comment or ask a question, please click the little man with the hand raised. It's sort of in the middle of your screen up at the top, and then I'll try to keep track of the order of events in terms of who raised their hand. Thank you for that. Arian, did you also have a question?
No, I had one, but it was addressed on the letter of necessity and where that belongs in the process, but definitely appreciate the perspective that what's important is all these steps and the information for the steps, not necessarily right now the order.
Yeah, I think, the ordering we can work on when we transfer this to a process model with the SWIM and we can take note of all those things, but I think at the end of the day, we could spend a lot of time moving things around because I think for various things, they'll happen in maybe slightly different order. The important thing is that we capture all the steps in the process as well as identify the opportunities where we can make improvements or even reimagine, a recommendation relative to how we move forward. I mean, maybe there's an opportunity when you're getting your authorization for surgery and you know you're having hip surgery and you're going to need a wheelchair, that you get the measurements for a wheelchair or whatever is required in order to do that pre-op, and it goes all in with the surgery recommendation. I mean, those are the types of things I think we're looking for on how could we make that happen to streamline the process.
And that was actually going to be my comment, was that there's an implied knowledge that X is needed. So for example, letter of medical necessity needed. For each of these areas where there's information needed, that's a really interesting call out for how can we provide that information at the right point in the process.
Exactly.
So what are the inputs, but also what are the requirements and how do we communicate those requirements to the actors who are working through the requirements?
Exactly. And I mean, I don't know that this certainly wouldn't apply. I mean, there's times when you need a wheelchair and you're not having surgery. So obviously it's not going to fit every situation, but I think it makes sense to identify those situations when certain groups of data will be available. And then in other cases, it may be that there's a problem with a wheelchair and wheelchair has to be replaced. So that requirement is going to be a different, focus. And so what needs to happen in those situations, or if it's something that's a chronic condition that's leading to the need of a wheelchair or some other durable medical equipment, at what point in the process do those chronic conditions then necessitate those needs? And again, I don't know if there's specific clinical standards that can be applied to those types of conditions, because I'm not a physician, but those are things I think we should, talk about if there's opportunity.
So, Cheryl, this is Anil. I've had my hand up. I'm not sure if you could see it.
I can't see anybody's hands up. So, how do
I have a problem?
Okay.
And I commented on it first that we should hold up hands, and my hand has been up the entire time.
Yeah.
Yes, actually, we've started out with Steve Brown was up first. The order is Gus, then Anil, then Alexis, then Jocelyn.
I don't know why I can't see those, but...
Oh, okay, because it's in the participant list on the right-hand side underneath the active speakers and the presenters, and there's a participant list. So I'll help you if you can't see that. I'm happy to help out here, Cheryl. So Gus, would you like to offer some comments?
Sure, thank you. And this is less about data, but first, this is a great start because DME is probably one of the most challenging prior auth issues because there are so many people involved, and you've done a nice job of outlining it, and I agree with the comments that have been made so far. I have just, because this is going to be a a sort of a prototype for future ones, I'm just going to suggest a wording change, and I know that doesn't have much to do with data, but payer recommends alternative under PA denied. There's a lot of sensitivity in the payer market about recommending saying anything contributory to anything that smells or looks like the insurer is offering treatment, or all the payer does is authorize or deny. And I agree with the intent of that sentence or that block. I would just suggest alternate wording, because most insurers do not recommend anything because they're not authorized to provide treatment. They are merely authorized to provide payment. So if I could suggest a wording change from payer recommends alternative to payer offers alternatives, covered alternatives for consideration. And that's just it's a minor legal ease kind of thing, and I'm not a lawyer either, but I've had lots of discussions internally and externally about this particular subject, and we probably will need a lawyer to approve the final wording, but I do have a lawyerly objection to recommends, because that suggests that the payer is offering treatment. They are not treatment renderers. They are merely approvers, and so offers alternative that may be covered might be a better way.
Yeah, I think that gets into step therapy, right? To your point, they're not recommending. They're just identifying alternatives that are available.
I think identifying is a good way of saying it, because ultimately the decision is always the provider. The payer merely denies or approves payment. So I think that's a great suggestion, but I do have a problem with the word recommend.
Thank you. I think the next person in the queue is Anil.
Yeah, thank you. So I guess this might go back to something we discussed on the last call, but you know, there are other groups that have looked at creating a template, if you will, of prior authorization within the context of using existing HIT standards or emerging ones, and going back to Steve's comment, with some pretty nice flow diagrams using conventional standards of representing information flow and things of that sort. So, are we leveraging some of the work that, for example, DaVinci has done around pre-authorization, starting from the work that's been done in the industry, as opposed to spending, I think, you know, what could be very good quality time creating a sample prototype of a flow, but others have done this already. And I just would ask that we think about, and as a clinician, I can tell you that there's many, many, many permutations of this. And so if we spend a lot of time focused on the perfect prototype, we're not going to get to what really I think our group needs to do, which is focus on what I've heard from others. Focus on some of the standards and some of the hooks and some of the ways in which we're going to simplify the art of the possible for what a next-gen PA mechanism might be that's powered by open standards. And so I just putting that out there, I'm not an expert on what DaVinci is doing, but I do know and I've seen some of the work that they've done. And in many ways, I look at the sample prototype and I wonder whether we can just take something that's been done already and use it as a starting point.
So thank you for that. I think we're trying to do exactly that and leverage models and examples in the industry to create a foundation. So I think the next person in the queue is Alexis.
Hi. Going back to the discussion about ordering and steps, I was just going to bring up that I think a big piece of the problem, which is probably interesting for us to point out where systems fail, is that there are different providers and different DMEs working in different ways and in different orders. And so this isn't going to be a fit for everybody, but I think, as Cheryl was saying, getting to what the pieces are and where the opportunities are to make it flow better and possibly take out the amount of steps to get there, to get the approval in the end, makes a lot of sense. But I do think it somewhere it would be interesting to be able to note the variations that happen in different health systems or with different DMEs. And I think that not only is it like a not always 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, sometimes, you know, we were talking about step three being possibly moved. In my experience, step three happens there as part of the beginning of the PA process, but it's not where it ends. And it gets revisited again along the lines later on where Jim was talking about. And so I think, you know, recognizing that, that it's not the, the best, you know, necessarily 1,000% accuracy every time for everybody, but that all of the steps are there and knowing that they can be kind of juggled around a little bit is actually a good thing to point out, because there's so much variation in practice with it that that's also what's causing system problems.
Thank you. Jocelyn is next in the queue. Cheryl.
Thank you.
Thanks, Alex. And I love all this commentary because I think everybody's sort of touching the problem from different sides. I wanted to maybe to come up with sort of a thought that's between, I think, where Jim is, and this work is great, guys. I think doing one, I've got air quotes in my with my hands, doing one and showing the complexity and all of the steps that are way beyond just the simple PA submission and adjudication steps that I think everybody sort of thinks about prior auth as being and what makes it hard. I think this really illustrates it. I think to Steve's point, I think that there's a lot of people that have spent time in this space and we can learn from them. I think that when I was watching you walk through it, Jim, the notes that I made were, I think that this is a great exemplar and being able to show sort of the variation, I think getting to the last speaker's point around how much does this vary when you move from DME. And I think the categories from my experience are really DME being one category, infusions and sort of on-site dispense being another category, buy, build, expensive medications being their own category, med-surg being a category, and then PT and referrals being a last category. It's sort of the bundle to understand sort of putting those, how do they differ, where are things simpler or harder? And I think because what you're laying out here is not just the pure submission of a prior authorization and the understanding of the rules for one specific thing is what you're laying out here is all of the steps. And I think being able to normalize the steps, regardless of what order they happen in, I think is what's critically important to start to show, I think, to a couple of the subsequent speakers, where we're already making progress and where we're starting to look at things in that API, real-time interactive way, to be able to get benefit information just in time with some of the work that we're doing in DaVinci, to be able to understand how to capture or pull the data out of the EHR to get somebody enrolled on something. So if I think about the steps and my own personal experience and work in this area, I think you're really looking at benefit identification, sort of that transparency of benefit as being the first step. The order itself, I'm going to place the order, I'm going to prescribe something being the next step. What do I need to enroll somebody in this service, whether it's ordering, you know, in this case, something that's really complex like a wheelchair, or whether it's something as simple as just getting somebody a referral to a new doctor or to a specialist. And then the actual PA itself, which is in some ways a lot of the same data that's involved in enrollment. And I think it gets to that point around there's patient data required there when you're talking about the enrollment and the PA step. So those, to me, I think how to keep the patient involved in this whole process through clear communication and alerting, I think is critical. And then I think understanding what other activities, I love that point around the letter of necessity or patient source data, really being, I don't know if it's its own step or if it's just making sure that the patient is aware of the process as it's appearing and the power of things happening in the market around like smart applications and third-party integration through CDS hooks into these workflows really enable us for the first time to be able to make this more seamless and not be these paper-driven crazy fax processes because we can make things chattier than they've been in the past. So I guess my key takeaways is I love where Jim is headed with this. I think that, to me, understanding sort of all the categories is important, as I spelled out, and then understanding the steps, because I think it's that ability to remove variability that's going to allow us to figure out where we can take current work that's happening in the market and propose those as the best practices, and then identify where we have no solution, like this whole idea of sort of the chattiness and the patient at the center. I think we can look at what should be the solution in those scenarios so that we can really come up with something concrete and make real recommendations to the market, you know, in the next couple of months. And I'll write it up, Alex, and send it as an email.
Thank you, Jocelyn. Cheryl, I see that we have Jim has his hand up. I thought Steve Brown did, but it came down. So,
okay.
I get back to Jim.
Thank you. I can see it now. I don't know why I wasn't.
Awesome.
My machine wasn't letting me bring the attendee list up and down, but now I can see it.
Awesome.
I still see Steve. Steve, do you have a comment you want to make before we go to Jim?
I guess I could, sure. There are going to be any number of tweakings and variations and versions and all that sort of stuff of anything that anybody puts out like this, right? And one of the things that, you know, if we pick proper standards and tooling, we can accommodate that and expect that we're going to go through multiple iterations, make changes, find commonalities, find differences in various process and process flows, and actually it's not all that scary if you do it right. There's no way that, you could expect that anything in PowerPoint is going to stand up to real life. But there's a lot of experience in doing this sort of stuff outside of this area that I think we could really benefit from. And rather than worrying whether it's step 7 or 7.2 or 7.3, saying, well, it doesn't matter because it might be that or it might be this, we can model all of it and know what the common components are, what the common required data elements are, and actually run that on Red Hat.
Okay. I'm not that familiar with Red Hat, but maybe there are others that are that could weigh in on. Jim, I think you were next.
Yeah, thank you. As I listened to all this, and as our team kind of dug into with Jim and Alexis the complexities, a comment that was made earlier attracts me because it does seem like, you know, are we on like a Wicked Witch hunt with, you know, finding the next Wicked Witch to kill for the wizard by trying to get all these different workflows? And I wonder if we just started with what information is needed to get approval and work backwards and said, forget what order things are done in. What if we said, okay, what information is needed for a wheelchair? All right, what do we need from the patient? What do we need from the provider? What do we need from the therapist? What do we need from the DME company? And what if we work backwards and didn't get hung up in the complexities of sort of these spaghetti workflows, but instead started with what data, what information is needed, and then define standards around it, and then maybe then start defining how that information can move and be defined. Would that simplify and land us in a place where we divorce ourselves from the nuances of iterative workflows?
I personally would say yes, I think that will bring us. I think we needed the workflow to provide some context so we had a common footing of a way to look at it. But I think now that everyone's looking at the workflow, it does help to say for durable medical equipment, if we take different types, maybe there's classes of durable medical equipment that can be done or different life events that drive information or data requirements. And, you know, for those purposes, this is the information that's needed along the life cycle that would cause this particular thing. And, of course, that's a huge list. So we can't expect that we're going to go through every type of, DME or every type of whatever, but I think if we take an example from each type of life cycle that we've already sort of talked about, where we've said, you know, pharmacy and for durable medical equipment, for medical authorizations, if we take some samples from each of those and start with what is the information that's needed and who do we need to get it from and how can we ensure that it's complete and is there a way to standardize or normalize that data so that it can be acted upon? Is there a better way to gather it and when's the soonest that data is available? Because ideally, you know, as everybody has expressed, if that data can be made available sooner in the life cycle and it's shared, you know, as openly as we can make that happen, then that information will be able to be acted upon in a manner that's more expedient as well. Because everyone's desire is for the decisions to be made electronically in more of an immediate fashion. So like the case of a surgery, if we know with every surgery for hip replacement or whatever it is, the person's absolutely going to need a wheelchair and a walker, then, you know, why are we waiting, for the end of the visit to make that PA go through? Why isn't it done up front? You know, that's, that makes sense. What do other people think? Okay, I see some more hands. Alexis, we'll let you go next.
Yeah, so I agree. I had just been, a couple people were chatting, typing. I had put down before that, you know, I agree with what you're saying, as I mentioned before, with taking away numbering the steps and maybe breaking it up into blocks or groups and then listing under each group what happens at that, you know, what needs to happen at that point or what needs to be collected and listed that way, I think makes sense. So I agree with what you're saying. And I just wanted to mention that when we talked in the smaller group, when this was being put together, as far as case samples, we talked about trying to start, it was first mentioned that perhaps we'd start with the simplest, and then that way it could be built off and go into more complicated PAs. And then the more we all talked about it, we thought that let's start with something that's the most complex, being this wheelchair example for DME. And then the more complex that we can solve something, the less complex would be able to trickle down with just less steps. So I just thought it was important to mention that and see what other people thought about that.
All right, that's a very good point. I'm sorry, I'm not catching the order of which, so I'm just going to go alphabetical. Anil?
I don't have a question right now. Yeah,
okay.
I don't have a question right now.
I think it's the speaker. I don't think anybody has their hands up, so actually I'm not clear how I raise my hand because I don't see an icon, so hopefully I'll get some instruction. So I'm going to, at some point, I'll just go ahead and learn that functionality. But for now, I heard Jocelyn talking about the categories. I've heard Cheryl talk about the classes of data and sort of the examples for the major buckets. And I would be, what I'm hearing is that people are feeling good about the fact that we've started to prototype this, but are ready to jump sort of to the next level. And so I think it might be beneficial to have some discussion around the list that I saw Jocelyn put in the chat about the DME infusion on-site buy-build, dollar medication, med-surge, PT referral as big categories. So I think that it would be good if we could think about what we think are the key categories and then also think about how the classes of data and if there's any linkage, as I'm seeing Denise Webb type, with USCDI.
So I think that was a good summary, Alex. Any other comments or questions at this time? All right. Well, why don't we go to the next slide? Because I think the next component was we were going to talk about where do we go from here and sort of what our next steps are. And I think this set us up for a good transition to that. So at this point in time, we had talked about whether we need to put together some kind of small workflow for the other types of use cases. But maybe what we can do is instead of doing that, and I don't know if we can jump to this, because sometimes people need a picture in order to generate all the thoughts that they have around a particular subject. I know that I'm a little bit that way. So, but, you know, if there's a medical service like, you know, requesting a surgery prior authorization, for instance, if that needs to be expressed out in another workflow like this, or if we could take this workflow and just adjust it, but maybe take it to the goal that we were just talking about, where we focus a little bit more on, well, what are the information needs that we would need at any point in time in order to make that decision positive so that the prior auth gets decided upfront without a lot of back and forth versus all the steps in the process that's needed. Like, really focus on what are the information needs and do we even know what they all are? I mean, I don't know that I can, I do represent a payer, but I don't know that for every type of situation I would know what all of the prior authorization rules are that are applied to every decision that's being made. But at least we can start categorizing or developing those classes of information that we need in order for those types of things to start being generated. So what does the group think about that? What ways
do you have? Oh, sorry, you have Arian's hand up and then Jocelyn's.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you. Right. So, you know, I think foundationally here, the kind of the first order, what do you need to know is whether PA, medical necessity, or some kind of preclearance activity is required for a particular procedure or equipment code. I have to admit total ignorance. I know how medications are ordered and I know how procedures are billed for. I don't know whether there's an equivalent of an RX norm code or a equivalent code, NDC code for DME. But you need at least first some way of knowing whether the payer requires some level of preclearance for the procedure or product category, UPC, other code. And then, you know, again, at the sort of second order is at least access to the relevant information for what's required. And again, I think we previously talked about not just by the payer, but potentially by the a patient-specific, eligibility-specific requirement here. So we should be mapping at the very least the need to access that information. So, you know, if we just got to the ability to fill it out, to fill out the information electronically with a dumb paper form or a dumb electronic form, that would be a major workflow improvement above here. We also talked about cost information. So if there are major cost sharing provisions, any cost sharing that triggers, you know, Medicare specific rules relevant to patient payment, and there's need for prior notification ABN for patients would be also an important consideration. We talked about, you know, potentially some of the payment options that are required for things like DME, and then. We also talked about, and again, this goes at greater or lower levels of complexity, you know, what specific information is required potentially by the payer, but also, you know, and in this use case brings this out really nicely, potentially by one of the intermediaries. So for anybody who's had to order specialty medication, there may be maybe medication handling and delivery requirements that are required by the patient to fill out. So, again, at the sort of first and second order here, access to information about whether preclearance activities, prior authorization, medical necessity, or other requirements are required, and information about what is required, where that information is patient and plan product specific, and then information relative to the source. So what does the payer require? What does the DME equipment or specialty pharma require? What have you. And then we get down to, well, how do we actually automate the workflows? And, you know, those data requirements are going to be somewhat different on a case-by-case basis, but at the very least, we need to get access to those upfront pieces of information. Thanks.
Thanks, Arian. So I saw Jocelyn also had her hand.
Yep.
So I was going to go to her, and then we'll come back and maybe have a suggestion. So go ahead, Jocelyn.
I really like the point that Arian just made. I think it's I think that the complexity and the type of auth you're trying to get done can be greatly simplified based on the topic or the particular challenge that that patient and doc are facing. And there's a sort of another, I think, probably way we could cut through sort of the types of authorizations, or the types of sort of these order workflows that we're talking about, you know, and I don't know if it's as simple as bundling them into, you know, something that's very simple that can be decided based on an ICD-10 code. You know, if you have this diagnosis, you get this thing, which we see a lot on the pharmacy side, but also on the med-surg side. You know, once you get to a certain level, this is the thing that gets approved based on your plan. And then I think that there are things that require a lot more information, potentially from multiple sources, so are more complex. And then I feel like there's other authorizations, like the DME example, that it's really iterative and there's multiple parties involved. And so that's almost its own type of activity. And that's more, I think, to the point that Arian was just making, which is, what's the superset of data you need so you can collect that as soon as it's available? And that as you learn more through a particular patient's journey, that there are things that you can automatically approve that you're maybe going to not need till later. I think the example about the, we know somebody that's having their, you know, hip and femur replaced is likely going to need a wheelchair when they get out. So why don't we approve the wheelchair sort of ahead of time? It's this whole idea of, to me, it's that remove and reduce the need for prior authorization by in sometimes the payer self-serving content they've already collected for other purposes about that patient in that particular situation. So I guess if I were to sort of summarize sort of what I was thinking as Arian was talking in the earlier conversation is I think in addition to cost, I think there's a type about the level of data and the complexity of the actual prior authorization that's required that might allow us to sort of divvy up what could be automated quickly versus what's going to take some time and some maturity to be able to get to further automation.
So those were both really great comments. Alex, did you want to say something?
I would love to get Arian's thought process and sort of as a discrete bulleted list, because I think there's a framework emerging with the list that Jocelyn started with, that Jim also added to for inpatient, like outpatient, so we'd have our categories. We know we have USCDI, but there's Arian sort of brought together this sort of, I think, this methodology that we need to almost walk through, and I wish we could grab it and kind of translate it into a document on the fly to see if we're all thinking in the same way, because what it may do is take the work that we've seen from the prototype team in giving us a glide path forward so that we can understand, you know, where can we find, where the, we know, if we're all in agreement on the commonalities, then we can start to look at the opportunity areas. We can start to then do the deep dive into, do the standards exist and not exist? And it's not just standards, it's vocabularies, it's policy, it's that we have to start to also look at. So I'm really curious if people are feeling like there's some key pieces that have been brought out by the team today that if we put them together, we can probably have a pretty good framework to affirm next week and hit the ground running in April as a result of a Kumbaya.
Yeah, and if it helps, you know, I've got in mind, you know, a Venn diagram or a set of sort of descending prerequisites, and it might be useful for me just to frame some of those up and kind of think about the bulleted list and what you need to have at the deeper levels in order to, what you need to have previously had in order to actually get down to the deep levels. Because I think sometimes we jump to how do I collect every piece of information, but there's a ton of value that I can have by just knowing this procedure requires X. And then, you know, at the next level, there's a ton of information I can have about the specific requirements for X, and even if I don't automate every piece of information. So if you want, I can think about what that step-down category looks like.
It's resonating for me. Cheryl?
That's a great idea. I agree. I think that sounds like a great idea, and I think it will help people visualize what we're talking about a little bit more. So I do think that would be great.
Cool.
As input for our next meeting.
And realize that we're trying to move this. That would be great. If you can get that to us sooner, the better, because what we want to do is start to pull these various pieces from the conversation and the worker bees that are willing to help us advance efforts offline, because a week goes by really quickly.
Yeah, understood. I've been in the chair role, and I know exactly how it works.
Bless you.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that's a great next step, you know, from that perspective. Do we also want to take the DME workflow that we have and sort of try to bring it into a more of a bulleted list or something like that for the next steps, Alice? I mean, what do you think about that? If we were to take it and then say, all right, well, what is the information that's required at each of the various steps? Again, not assuming that the steps are in order, but if there's information requirements for each of those things, like trying to pull out so we have an example we can apply it to as we move through Arian's model, and we can sort of see how it would apply to the DME.
I think you may have a clearer picture in mind than is coming to me at the moment. So first, let's see if Jocelyn has a comment. I also want to do a check-in with Lauren about where we're in the public comment period. Is that at 10 after or 20 after? I don't have the agenda in front of me, so please keep us honest on the public comment.
20 after. We're 20 after.
Okay.
We've got about 2 minutes.
Yeah. Jocelyn, did you have another comment?
I did. I wanted to build again on Arian's point about, I think that this idea that the data itself matures through a process, I think is really important. We did some really great brainstorming last year on the concept of price cost transparency in one of our DaVinci working sessions, where we really came up with this concept of there being a funnel, and depending on sort of how precise you knew exactly what it is that you needed to do at any given point in time during a care journey, you could get a more precise answer about cost. But that way up front, when you're really looking at all the options, having as much transparency and getting some rough ranges in itself had value to know what was possible or plausible with a particular patient, and then also knowing sort of what options to look at. So I think that this concept of the idea of the data getting higher and better quality as you get through a process, I think, is a really important one for us to keep in mind. And also that often, you know, unlike a simple pharmacy prescription, right, for a generic drug that goes through and is very fast, it's sort of this one-time event, right, while you're sitting in front of the doc, that many of the things that we're talking about that cause real pain and cause delay are things that often aren't just being touched by one team, but are moving across teams so that, you know, what the primary care doc has for info versus the specialist versus the hospital, sort of the repetitive amount of times that we go through this data flow and how that in itself triggers a lot of noise and pain around denials based on incomplete information or somebody changes a location or, you know, all those things are really, I think, that cause that hair pulling out frustration that we all have with prior authorization. I think it's important, sort of the understanding that the patient isn't static and is moving through a care system, right, in order to get this service or this surgery or this DME item actually in their possession is, I think, a really important concept that we need to keep in mind, because the part of the pain, I think, is that, you know, somebody gets a yes, and then two steps down, somebody gets a no because they're using different data sets.
So, Jocelyn, in addition to having the buckets of high-level flavors, along with this linkage at some point to USCDI, along with Arian's sort of bulleted list and kind of the layers of the prior authorization onion, I also think I just heard you talk about the principles, goals, and assumptions that we need to start to capture along the way. Did I hear you correctly?
I think so, Alex. And I think, I don't want to sound like I don't want to get into the weeds here, but when we did enrollment, we made a decision to move enrollment out of the NCPDP standard and actually leverage FHIR to get the data out of the EHR in one of the task groups I worked on over the last couple of years. We went through this exhaustive exercise where we literally inventoried all of the data that would be needed for a subset of drug specialty meds. And that in itself is sort of a heroic work. I think we need to be figuring out the framework so that everybody can pick up the framework and then for their niche area, bring their SMEs. Because otherwise it falls apart really fast if you're trying to boil the ocean of all of the data. And really the exercise I think we want to focus on is how much of the data, the types of data we need, the categories of data we need, and when we need them are going to be surfaceable in USCDI and what's not. Because I think then that's something that can be acted on by the industry to say, what are the outlier contents of USCDI? Patient source data, I think, is going to be one of the big pieces there. And some of the payer-related information.
Thank you. Useful insights. I think Steve Brown is next, Cheryl.
Hi. I'd like to make a friendly amendment on the next steps slide so that for the sub-bullet, develop high-level opportunity matrix for standards, data models, integrations, transport methods to support practical ideal state, I'd like to add process models.
Okay. I think that goes back to the thing that you brought up before with the process model reference.
Yeah, yes, it does.
Yeah, it was there, and I did capture that. So we can definitely add that to the list. All right, so I think that where we are in the meeting, we need to sort of figure out exactly what our next steps are going to be. We have convened this smaller work group that created this durable medical equipment process model. So we can either take that work and then say, let's go to the next step. We're defining what's the type of data that's needed within that process to then try to apply it to that Venn diagram that we're going to get from Arian and see how the two would match up and sort of compare those for our next meeting. Is that something that would be useful for the group or not? Or does someone else have another suggestion for an next step?
It sounds like it. If I hear what you're saying, the DME workflow pivot to the stuff we've been talking about what data is needed by who, the Venn diagram. Is that what you're saying?
Right.
But do that to the DME model? That makes sense. We need some additional expertise.
Right. So to me, we would go, you know, to that picture of the model with all the opportunities on it and take a look at that and say, what's the information requirements that we need for each of the steps? And again, knowing the steps may not happen in this order, but just understanding what are the information requirements. And then assuming that most, you know, for most medical equipment of some sort, this type of information is going to be required so that decisions can be made. And then look at how does that line up to what Arian's going to propose as the data categories and the Venn diagram. And then further, how would that then look when we go to say, okay, what Da Vinci activities occur that would support this prior authorization that we're talking about? Like, you know, are there APIs that are being developed that require photographs or pictures or, you know, things of that nature? If it's a wound that we're talking about and somebody needs a, you know, a wheelchair because of whatever has happened. I mean, I don't know what the expectations are because I really don't know what the requirements are going to be for these types of things, but we can at least assume the types of data that might be needed and then determine at what point would that data be present in the process and are those data requirements supported by USCDI and others, we can then take it to that level. But first we need to identify what is the data that we need to make decisions around. I mean, I can start with this prototype and in the beginning say, well, I need to know what are all of the instances where a prior auth is needed for a wheelchair. And I don't know if it's always needed or if it's only sometimes needed. Like, you know, I don't know the rules, as I said, for every payer for those things, but that's what we would need to do and call out for each one of these bullets. So just to try to create the visual in my mind, we'd be talking about we need to know when a prior auth is required. Maybe there's certain types of prior auths where we need to know specific geographics about the or demographics about the individual, because that makes a difference in terms of what's going to be ordered or in what form the product is going to be delivered. And then when is that information available? Who collects that information? Who provides that information? In some cases, as you said, with this more complicated scenario, the provider might provide some of that data, and yet the therapist might provide some of that data. So looking at who's responsible for providing that data as part of the process, also maybe those are things that we can try to simplify. Today, we can say this is what it is for some of the ones that are known, and then maybe this is where we can make recommendations and say, hey, this is data that's going to be needed regardless of who provides it. Does that make sense? I'm just trying to make it a little more clear what my suggestion is, so I don't know if it's coming across.
Carol, I think that what might be helpful is to take the steps and put them in more of a table format so that we can look across the different types to say, are there things we haven't captured? Are there steps we haven't captured? And will there be data that's not represented here? That we can tease out of the work that Arian's going to do. That's I'm just visualizing in my head sort of what I think a next iteration would look like. I don't know if people are in agreement that, you know, sort of being able to map out across all these different types of areas will let us know, like, what have we left on the table?
Right. We have to, unfortunately, take a break for public comment, but let's come back to that point as soon as we get back. Thank you for bringing that up. Lauren, go ahead.
Thanks, Cheryl. Operator, can we open the public line?
Thank you. If you would like to make a public comment, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the queue. You may press star 2 if you would like to remove your comment from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys.
Great. And any comments in the queue at this time?
There are currently no comments.
Okay. Alex and Cheryl, I'll let you know if we get any additional comments from the phone.
Thank you. Cheryl, do
you want to? Okay. I do see Alexis had a comment she wanted to finish.
I was just going to say, as far as I agree with what Jocelyn was saying, we had talked a little bit earlier in the conversation about breaking it up rather than steps into kind of blocks of time and what's needed and lists under each one, or maybe as in a table. Because I think that a Venn diagram is going to end up looking and being just as confusing, if not more, than the flowchart is reading now. I think overlapping pieces in the diagram isn't necessarily going to help us tweak out what's needed and who's responsible for it and how to make it better.
All right, well, maybe what we can start with then would be a table and sort of outline from the process some of the opportunities and identify based on a table so we could just structure the information a little bit and make it easier for people to read. Would that be helpful?
I think it would be clear that way. I think I can't envision when I think about seeing it in the overlapping circles in a Venn diagram, I don't see it making it any easier. A table, I think, would lay it out better.
All right. Well, then, you know, we'll talk about that a little bit offline in terms of how we structure it, but would the group that was already working on the DME be willing to work, and I'll volunteer to participate on that team as well to try to translate what we've already done to map it into a table to sort of start capturing what some of the information and data requirements would be at within that process, so we could try to model that out and sort of see how that would map itself against the requirements of data that are currently in the USCDI. Would that be a good next step?
Yeah, we'd be happy to help. We'll need a lot more expertise on what that data is, and we're happy to help with that.
Okay, because we can bring forward what has currently been approved as USCDI version 1, which is what's in the current interoperability rule, because we have that. That's well documented. And then we can from there and say, what else do we need that's not on this list? And then talk about how we need to bring that forward or accelerate those data elements to get them in the list. And again, we're talking holistically now, but we're not going to be able to do this and map every single piece of durable medical equipment. We're looking at trying to bring it up to a data class level or a category level.
I think so. To me, what's daunting is all the different types of DME and all the different meds and everything, and just the breadth of types of information and data needed to actually be collected from various stakeholders seems pretty daunting. I don't know if others.
I think it is, which is why it's been out here for so long, because I think so many groups have tried to cut it and slice it in different ways, and at the end of the day, you can't get away from the complexity. So if we could create a framework that complexity can be reviewed under, so we can help accelerate or streamline or reimagine, then I think that we're achieving the recommendations that we're being charged with.
Okay, so for example, if we're operating at a framework level that says, for the durable medical equipment, the wheelchair, right? There's information from the provider, there's information from the therapist, and there's information from the DME that all go into what's needed to approve, but also to fulfill, right? If we're just looking at fulfill, then are we back to simply what information is needed to justify payment instead of, and is that a CPT code? Is that a, ICD? It seems like there's lots of different types of data that may not already be standardized.
Right, exactly.
And so you're just saying high level, we'd start with patient specific data about diagnosis, data about in the USCDI, and then see what's missing and create a high-level framework, not necessarily try to solve it with terminologies that don't exist.
Exactly. I think that's the best way to try to apply an example so we can sort of see where we go from here.
So I see Jocelyn's hands up. This is Alex.
Yeah,
so you want to go ahead, and then
sorry.
I have a comment.
I think that's exactly that type of category information that you were describing, Jim, I think is exactly what we need to capture, because I think that's what where I've seen progress in being able to automate quickly is where you can get to really discrete data points that are already digitized, like an ICD-10 code. And if that code exists, then a lot of the other information becomes irrelevant. And I think understanding what type of data is required and then understanding the players gets to whether sort of it's an easy, multi-party, sort of an iterative type of prior auth or, patient journey that then lets us sort of tackle it in different ways because it might require more chattiness, right, and more support if it's something that has a long duration or is multi-party versus something that could be the low-hanging fruit that you could automate more quickly by just being able to get down to there are these four elements you need that allow you to automate and to get to that perfect state, right? But that we still don't have it today.
I want to check, Denise, I've been seeing the green check. I'm taking those as you're concurring and agreeing with what you're hearing others say, but want to make sure we're not missing that you have a comment to offer.
Well, I was just going to reinforce this idea that, I really think when I think about prior authorization and the process we're going through here, it would be really helpful to work through the example we're on around DME and wheelchairs specifically, and really start with assuming a PA is required. I get it that every payer has different rules and a PA might not be required, but if we would just assume a PA is required, then we start and go backwards to, okay, payer, what data elements, what data is needed to process the PA and then work from there, figuring out, okay, what of those data elements are already structured and available digitally and who has them, when are they captured, can they be captured sooner, and, defining who has what role and work through the whole example with the wheelchair, and then that creates a framework or a way we can look at other use cases or other types of DME. But I think we really just need to work through this one and start with the data first and then start overlaying the roles, the steps, and the order of the steps and so forth for the ideal state.
I like that idea.
I agree with a lot of what everybody said.
All right. Well, Alex, I think we need to wrap up because we're at time. I do think this gives us a way to move forward. I do appreciate the groups, and I'll give you time to speak as well. We're going to discuss a little bit offline on how we're going to organize the next mid-level meeting, but if any other folks would like to participate in that explosion of the wheelchair example, please let us know so we can include you when we meet offline to come back to this overall meeting.
Well said.
Okay.
Considering
well,
the
everyone.
Time that we're at. Yep.
All right.
Thank you, Lauren.
Thanks, everybody.
Have a great day.
Thank you.
All right. Meeting adjourned.
Thanks.